Hello and welcome to the new Brother UK Cycling Podcast with me, Timothy John, and my co-host Phil Jones, Managing Director of Brother UK, better known to the cycling community as Road Phil. Phil, good to see you.
Thanks, Tim, and I'm really excited that we've got this podcast together at long last, where we're really going to dive beneath the surface of what's really going on in the UK road cycling scene, bring some of the best riders, the best managers and the best personalities behind the sport, get them in the studio and start telling the stories about why this sport is so great in the UK.
Coming up in today's show, Adam Kenway, former British hill climb champion, twice a winner at Monsell Head and a road rider for Vitas Pro Cycling powered by Brother UK.
Basically, I get the hacksaw out. And so I've got the hacksaw, cut the bars down, everything I can off the saddle, I'll get the Dremel out, Dremel bits off. The line is what the RTT says, which is you need two brakes. If you're riding fixed, you've got to have a lock ring on the rear. So you've got to have two brakes, working brakes.
And a rear light this year.
Oh, yeah, rear light.
Yes, that's new, isn't it?
And Rebecca Richardson, also a winner at Monsell Head, the reigning Welsh hill climb champion, and a road rider for Team Brother UK on form.
I suffered some postnatal depression. I'm really like, I can draw, it sounds so dark, but in those warm-ups, I'll start drawing on some bad places I've been in mentally to really draw out in comparison, like kind of positive pain I'm going to feel on the hill.
Our guests today have mastered arguably the hardest discipline in all of cycling. The hill climb is the most demanding, the least forgiving of all the cycling disciplines. It's an event where the competitors literally race until the point of collapse. If an uphill time trial conducted from a standing start and requiring no more equipment than a clipboard, a stopwatch, and a bicycle stripped to the bone seems like an exercise in simplicity, well, think again. Within such a basic test of physical prowess lies a world of tactics, pacing, equipment choices, and a mental battle as ferocious as the action visible to the thousands of spectators who line the courses at the very biggest events. Those spectators, of course, are only one component of a wider social scene. The hill climb scene is a community where the rivals cheer each other on, they share lifts to events as well as tips, tactics, and other competitive information that, in another branch of the sport, would be regarded as highly confidential. Adam Kenway of Vitas Pro Cycling Team powered by Brother UK was national hill climb champion in 2016 and twice a winner of the men's event at Monsell Head, arguably the most prestigious hill climb of them all. Rebecca Richardson of Team Brother UK on form is the reigning women's champion at Monsell. She's the reigning national hill climb champion of Wales, and she's a podium finisher at last year's British Championships, which capped a season that yielded 18 consecutive victories and numerous course records. This season, she'll compete in hill climbs as a Brother UK sponsored athlete.
Good morning.
Good morning. Look, before we go any further, we've got to discuss the wheel that sat in front of us because it has a very unique feature. Rebecca, they're your wheels. Tell us about them.
Yep. So, there's a set of wheels here, and what's unique about them is that the spokes are made of string.
String.
So, string.
You're not even kidding.
I'm not even kidding. And, I saw a picture of these wheels about a week ago, and it was just like spaghetti on the floor. and the string is tensioned through the hub. And it's pretty scary, actually. I've never ridden on them. I will do on Sunday, and I do fully trust them. But they do look like they defy all kind of laws of wheel building. They are the lightest set of wheels available to buy in the world. They come in at 750 grams for the pair.
For the pair.
Wow. That is insane. Now, Rebecca, you bought them in this morning, and we were all like, where's the wheels, where's the wheels? And you put them in your hand and just go, oh my God, I've never picked a wheel up so light in my life. I mean, for most people, buying one wheel that that weighs 750 grams is a thing. This is a set of wheels.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
And they do look amazing as well. You know, it's not just that they're so light. It's just, they have this like unique look to them. The string is white. You've got some black carbon rims. And Lee of Zed Wheels, who hand builds each wheel individually, it's so well, you know, converse on this subject. I will not do these wheels justice right now. A conversation with him would be far much better. I'm really privileged to race on these for the hill climb season, and we'll have a little opener at the Magnificent Seven on Sunday.
And where is that held, really?
This is a really unique, and it kind of encompasses the idea of community and everything. So this is a really unique competition. Adam's done it before, so he's probably like, probably talk about it.
It's a really great event. So basically, there's seven hill climbs called Mag Seven, and basically it's a mass starts hill climb. So all the riders basically just set off behind a car, which basically marshals it. All the hill climbs are closed road, and basically the car drives you to the first hill climb, and then as we turn on the hill climb, you'll beep the horn, the car will like shoot off, and basically it's the first one to the top.
No way.
So it's
kind of bonkers.
Carnage.
Yeah, quite a bit of elbowing, because it's obviously like a 3-minute sprint going up this climb. So, and the problem is that after the first one or two events, basically you get to know who your main competition is. So then you just basically, you tail them and basically think, okay, I know I can beat him in the sprint, so all I need to do is hang on his wheel and go around in the last 10 metres. But then obviously they have different opinions and try to put you in places where you don't want to be. And it is, but it's a really good event. Mark Etchie, who puts it on, does a really good job of it.
He also runs Monsal. He organises Monsal. I did hear that, and I think you've done it before, Blake Street Climb. It's a 25-second sprint.
Yeah, that caught me out last year because I hadn't done any of the climbs before I actually went to the event. So, and some of the local riders knew them off the back of the hand. So the car went and I just saw everybody just sprinting full gas. And then I was thinking, I'm not going to do well on this. As they were finishing on the top, as I was just basically starting. Yeah, so it's just quite crucial just to really wreck it and to make sure you know the climbs. But that's like with all the hill climbs. It's quite a crucial part of the event, really knowing the climbs inside out, knowing where to ride, what the road surface is, tyre pressures. Because last thing you want to do is wheel spin, which it's amazing. Even dropping 5 PSI can mean it from you spinning your wheel or bumping everywhere to actually getting some good traction and putting your power down.
Yeah, so do you like set that on the day then? Yeah. I mean, you literally go and on the morning you've got to sort of, you know, what is the temperature, what's the road condition? So you're doing that on the day, are you?
Yeah, but I mean, in the lead up to any hill climb, do you find that you finish one hill climb and then you start looking at the next one? Oh. And then you'll spend the whole week looking through it. So by the time you get to the ride, you pretty much know what pressure you're going to ride. And you'll talk to those people too, and you're all like, what are we going to do? Do you remember Ryber?
Yeah. I think I can remember speaking to the week before. So as soon as you at another hill climb, so you finish the hill climb, go to the headquarters, prize presentation, and the first thing you talk about is the next week's hill climb and how to tackle it. And, just be careful on that bend. It's a bit slippery and cars and things like that. So, yeah, it's...
Because on the morning of Ryber, because that's a notoriously slippy one.
Yeah.
I'd wrecked it the day before. And then, your competitors, like my main competitors, are giving me this information. They're saying they've been up there, they've been brushing, but it's still slippy. So we're all, like, sharing this information.
Yeah. If anything, I thought they made it slippier. Yeah. They brushed it. So. They've just made it, like glass. So
this is the perfect lead in. I mean, this is immediately you've taken us to the heart of the issue, which for me at least is to go and stand on the side of a hill, watch a hill climb. It seems like a gloriously simplified version of bike racing. It's you against the clock. And yet when you start talking to the people that have got it nailed, there is a world of complexity beneath it, whether that be equipment, whether that be tactics, and also all wrapped up in this wonderfully supportive community. So we hope to cover all of those topics and a few more today. The most obvious feature of the hill climb, as Phil touched upon, is this incredible physical effort that's required to be successful. You literally ride until the point of collapse. Now, Adam, I know straight away from previous conversations that you've got a view on that, but give us a sense of that physical endeavour. It's a standing start and you go deep.
Yeah, and Ray, it starts probably an hour before the event. So you get there, you get your number pinned on, and you kind of have to mentally prepare yourself, because you've got to think you were putting yourself in that place. You're not riding with anybody else. Somebody isn't pushing. You've actually got to prepare to turn yourself inside out, which I think's one big thing about the hill climb. It's not about a road race where it's just a gradual burn effect. You have to think in a minute's time, you've got to put yourself in a place where your body doesn't really want to go. And if anything, it's trying to stop you doing it. That's why it's hurting you so much. But and to do that, I find, obviously, it starts with a warm-up. I hate the warm-up more than the event. But you know you've got to put yourself almost in the same place as you are going to be in the event. And so I put my headphones on. And also, as these events are so popular and there's so many people there and you know everybody, when you're trying to warm up, there's always people coming out in your chat, so you're trying to hurt yourself doing the warm-up as chatting to people and stuff like that. So it's all part of it, kind of thing. And that's one thing I find. I don't like the warm-ups.
What's your take on that, Rebecca?
Yeah, I completely agree with Adam. It's about an hour before the warm-up. I hate warm-ups. They are unnecessarily evil. Put music on, gets you in that place. But you like to put your body into that much pain, it takes a certain type of person, I think. And I think the community, it kind of plays a role as to why the community is what it is as well, I think. It attracts a certain type of person. And my own personal experience of that pain factor, I think comes from, like, you know, some earlier experiences in your life that might have not been a physical pain, that might have come from a different place. So, you know, I know that I suffered some postnatal depression. And really, like, I can draw, it sounds so dark, but in those warm-ups, I'll start drawing on some bad places I've been in mentally to really draw out the in comparison, like, kind of positive pain I'm going to feel on the hill. So they're those aspects. But then other times, you know, it can be quite enjoyable, a hill climb. So, yeah. Like, Beely Road is a nice, the headspace before that was more like, I'm just going to really enjoy this climb because it's so nice.
What, this year? So I've won Beely three years on the trot. And normally I turn up to the Beely and it's my only hill climb of the day. And I focus on it the week before, everything, and I want to do it. And it normally, like, goes to plan. But this year I did Ryber in the morning because it was 40th anniversary for Ryber Hill Climb. So it's one of my local clubs, so I wanted to, like, support them. So I did Ryber. I went and won that. And Ryber's a real brutal climb. Like, it's just horrible. It's
What do you mean brutal? I mean, like describe brutal. Is it steepness, length? You know, what is it?
It's like a dragon's tail.
So it starts off quite shallow and quite fast. So you tend to put loads of effort at the bottom and you're going quite fast and it flattens off. And so you're thinking, I'm fine. And then the second half of it is just horrific. You turn this hairpin and it goes from basically flat to 25%.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And bumpy and slippery. So where you want to get out of the saddle to put your power down, you can't. You have to sit down and your legs and quads are burning. There's a massive crowd quite near the top. And you can hear the crowd from quite a way off. So you're just thinking, come on, I need to get to that crowd. I need to get to that crowd. Once you get there, you're normally okay because you think you need a finish.
Yeah.
3 years ago, I was sick after it. I think that's always in my head as well because I've done it before and I was being sick and wasn't very well. And I think that was, I had a sickness bug in the week, which I shouldn't have done it, but as athletes, you just tend to just ignore that. So I was really at the top. So that's always plays in the back of your head, because thinking, you don't want to be in the same position you were at that time. So I did that in the morning and I won that and I was over the moon. And then I had an hour and a half to get from Ryber to Beely. So I kind of shut down the A6 and got a quick coffee because I need a coffee. And then I practiced Beely in the week. So I thought, I know exactly what power is going to have. It's going to start off at 450 and then at the top, just squeeze it a little bit, probably to 480. First 2 minutes, thought, fine. And then my legs just went completely. And it's like 430, 420. And for me, it just felt like I was crawling because I know the hill really well. It's one of my local hills. And again, that's quite a mental thing as well. So I knew I wasn't going to do that well, but I thought you have to carry on and get to the top. Kind of
I had the opposite experience to you. So I did exactly the same as you. I did Ryber and Beely. And then I actually did three in a day. So then I did Bank Road. I did the opposite to you. So Ryber, I've never ridden it before. And I was like, right, I'm going to do the minimum I can to try and win this. So the night before, I was working out all these different power ratios. And I worked out, based on what I thought I knew about my competitors, what the minimum power I needed to do for Ryber. I had to go, I did Ryber, it was horrible. I had to ride straight away to Beeley.
Yeah.
And then I found out through the grapevine that I had one Ryber, just not my normal kind of, you know, by about 10 seconds. Yeah. And then Beeley, no preparation comparative to the normal like mental stuff, because like you're rushing there, you have the time, you're rushing there, and it's freezing cold, and you have to ride down the hill, and I literally got there about 2 minutes before the start. And then Beeley was just like one of those really nice rides for me. It just ticked up all the way through the trees, and then you get to that final corner before this long straight, and this surge of like, you know that road race surge you get, that feeling where you're like on top of the world, people saying like you're smiling. And I just had all this surge of power.
Best feeling when you get that. Yeah. And it's when you time it right, you get the power right through the climb and you finish it off so well.
Yeah.
So I think a good insight there is actually, I went to the National Hill Climbs for the first time ever in 2018. I think it was on Peroyd Lane.
It was,
and, you know, and I experienced all this for the first time. And it was weird. You know, people are banging frying pans and all in fancy dress. You know, running up with you and all this kind of stuff. And it was just sort of frying. People were riding and doing the climb in a flat cap or in fancy dress. And it was kind of, it was almost juxtaposed to everything that you think about elite road racing, for example. You know, it's like about your, having your power to weight ratio all done and everything, you know, really being lean and having your kit all sorted, a super lightweight bike. And then you just see somebody grinding up, you know, dressed as Superman as one of the competitors on the day, doing exactly the same hill climb as you, who are the, you know, the super elite, who are going to be, you know, crack, you know, really going up at a top speed. And I thought, this is really special. You know, everyone was so happy and they were having such fun. There was families and, you know, and just the fancy dress, the atmosphere and the supportive environment. I just thought, that is absolutely brilliant. And I could see how addictive that could actually become, to become part of that community. I even thought, I'll have a go myself one day. I actually, it motivated me to think, do you know, I might be able to do that. If a guy can go up dressed up as Superman on a bike like that, then I can go up.
Oh, I totally agree. And basically everybody starts somewhere, and one of them hill climbs is, it's so appealing and so drawing, and they're so friendly that anybody can have a go. And it's, you get such wide range of abilities. The hill climb was actually what got me into road cycling from the start.
Wow, tell us about that. How
it's kind
was
of
that
a funny
journey?
Story. So I was actually 15. I did a bit of mountain biking, and I went work experience at a bike shop. And it was the last week in October, and it was in Leek. That year, the National Hill Climb was at the Cat and Fiddle, very local to it. And all these local riders were coming in with all their fancy kit. And I was 15. I did have a road back and like a really old one with down-tuned levers, which it was my pride and joy at the time. But looking back on it, it was a bit of a hack. And bringing all these fancy bikes in, which have been made for this event. And I was just like a kid in a candy store watching all these people. I didn't have any kit or any shoes, no helmet. And the owner from the bike shop, that week, he gave me a new set of shoes, tights, cycling top. And basically, we rode out to watch the event. And from that point, I just wanted to be able to do a National Hill Climb. Mm. Like years later, I won it. I couldn't believe it. It was something what I'd never thought I'd do.
I did the Burway this year, which isn't an open at the moment, and it should definitely be because it has been run as a nationals, and Chris Boardman won it. And that's what actually one massive part of the hill climb scene is that every hill's got a name, and it's all got a history. And like, I suppose unlike road racing, like I can't really tell you who's won all the premiers, but when it comes to hill climbing, we're like, we know everything, you know, about each climb. You know, you've gone into depth, you know,
before. You know the course records. And so I think hill climb has never been so popular. Mm. So if you look in the last 5 years, nearly every single course record's been broken. And I go to hill climbs now to break course records, because if I don't break them, I probably won't win. So I know what I need to do to break the course record. I used to be able to go to every hill climb and probably think, okay, I can go to do two in a day and I'll probably win both of them. But now I've got to be so precise what I do, because there's so many good riders out there. And it is kind of funny because straight afterwards, on before, you're probably having a coffee with them.
Yeah.
And talking about what you're going to try to do to beat them.
Yeah.
And also, when you finish, you're coming rolling back down, you're probably cheering them on. Because, so that's one of the great things about hill climbing.
Do you think that's a sort of an underlying deep respect between everybody that, you know, hey, you know, nod to you, I know that you can put yourself in the pain, you know, locker like I can. And there's something about, you know, that mutual respect with each other that, you know, we're here. I'm wondering, you know, when you go to that place, you know, where literally it's probably a place where most people can't go, where every part of your body is saying, stop, you know, this is really hurting. You might think you're at your full capacity, but there's that full capacity plus a little bit more. Are you always searching for that little bit more in that dark place?
Well, it's interesting this, because I was listening to a heavyweight lifter doing a talk recently, and he said that like a normal person can tap into about, say, 40% of their like energy available, you know, they're kind of like, and then an athlete can tap into about sort of 60%. But then you'll get like, say, here's a scenario, there's an accident on the motorway, you know, there's a car crash, and a mum is trying to, well, can I physically lift a car,
yes,
to get her kids out, and then she's tapping into like 80-90%, and I think that's what we're always searching for, and we try, and there are different ways you can try and do that, but unfortunately the way to do that is to go to, like you say, the preparation, to a very deep place where you've got to kind of recreate a scenario which is actually really real to you enough to tap into some extra level of adrenaline, so when the start goes 3-2-1, like you say, you're ready to turn yourself inside out. There has to be, you can't fake it. So there has to be, you've had to have got your body into a state where you're willing to do that.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about the specifics of that. Adam, you and I have discussed this before. A memorable phrase that has always stayed with me. You told me you didn't think you were really trying until your arms went numb.
Yeah, I mean, so I think it's because all the blood basically goes to the organs which are used, and I can't feel my fingers, and at the end of the hill climb, people laugh at me because I'm so like incoherent. I can't really speak that well, and I'm trying to take my Wahoo off my top of my off on my bike, and I'm dropping it because my hands don't really work right.
There are two different worlds on this side of the table. There's Phil and I who ride our bikes for fun. There's the people out there listening to this podcast who ride their bikes for enjoyment, presumably, and there's you guys who are prepared to go deeper than deep. What is the motivation? What pushes you?
I'm just quite competitive.
Me too.
quite competitive.
Yeah.
I like winning. I don't like losing. Mm. Especially something what I think I'm good at, and I want to win, really.
Same for me, yeah. And you'll tap into them, then as you develop like the different things, like your performance, then you start looking at the marginal gains. And so the mental side ends up being a marginal gain.
Yeah. And I do think it's, so this the dark place you put yourself in. For me, I can only go there a few times a year.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so leading up to hill climb, I might not race for a couple of weeks before, because I find my body remembers where it's gone, and it doesn't like going back there.
Oh, okay. Your muscle memory kicking in, eh?
Yeah. So I think it's quite crucial getting your basically body fresh for them, plus you're mentally fresh. Mm. I think it's easy getting your body fresh. You know what to do. You know what I mean? There's like your coach will help you with that, or you've been riding long enough so you know your body inside out. But getting yourself mentally fresh and mentally willing to put yourself in them places is different. And that takes time as well, knowing how you cope with things. Well,
this is a fascinating conversation. I mean, we've already come a long way from frying pans and flat caps and people that are turning up in fancy dress purely for the enjoyment. You guys are going to quite specific places psychologically,
however,
to deliver that performance.
However, like for me, like that moment though is like some sort of nirvana of mindfulness. So, you know, we're always trying to, we talk about that kind of like mindfulness, like a lot of people practice it now. You probably do it for, you know, athletic performance, just a way of relaxation and being in the present. But then, like, all you think about 2 minutes, 5 minutes or something like that is that finish line and the hill, and there is this like a tunnel vision, and there's no noise in your ear other than something that's happening on the road,
like in the crowd. You can't really, like, people say, oh, cheer you on, and I can't really remember it. I know it's there, I know it's helping me, but I can't say I can hear you shout. Unless there's a specific person I'm looking to, if it's a long climb, I'll say I want you to give me a time, like, say if I'm up or down or to work on. you're just in like a phase where
fuzzy.
It's hard to put. Unless you've done it, it's hard to.
I heard that described as actually, you know, having read lots of business books and things like that. It's basically just a state of flow, where actually it's almost like space, time, everything just gets you to this point where almost time stands still, and your focus is. They also say is a zen-like focus. You have this zen-like focus in the moment, and I'm guessing that's there's no greater reminder of what a moment is until you're in that moment that you are, which is at the extreme, I guess, extreme perimeters of your physical and mental capacity, and you're exploring that as an individual, as part of your own individual journey through sport almost. It's quite, you know, it's a real big thing, this.
If that wasn't enough, you know, as Phil says, you're in this zen-like moment. I think another aspect that's always overlooked is the huge tactical component. There must be something in your conscious mind in amongst this incredible depth of pain that allows you to focus on the tactical aspect of the race. So give us a sense of that.
That's the preparation. Yeah. That's why you spend a week obsessing about this climb. So once you've decided to ride it, you know exactly where you're going to change gear, what gear. You know exactly what your power number's going to be, so that when you do the climb, you're not even making decisions. No. You've already decided autopilot.
And you know exactly which line you're going to take, which like piece of tarmac, which stone you're going to miss, which grid you're going to clip. And to be fair, like it's even, like I'm almost run spectators down because I know where I'm going to ride, and that's where I want, that's where my line is, and that's where I know the smoothest tarmac. I know where the gradient slightly eases off at that point, so I can accelerate there. So when I'm like, a lot of people ride on numbers, and I really don't, because in my head I know exactly how I should be feeling at that point. And if the numbers say I'm doing poorly, it doesn't really matter because I'm feeling the same thing. And if I'm doing well, I'm feeling how I should be. But I think that's one great thing about the hill climbs. Everybody there does exactly the same hill and really feels the same pain because everybody's doing the same climb. It might be a little bit long for some. That's what I think is so special about it. And that's why everybody who does it knows how hard it is, and the respect that you've conquered it. It doesn't matter if you're first or last. And anybody who's rode a bike knows how hard it is to ride up a hill. So
Definitely.
Are you processing the times already posted by your competitors, or do you block that out?
You can't. You can't process them, really, because like you say, and into that mental space, you've got to be thinking of nothing else other than this like end goal, which is the top of the climb, and you say that you've already decided which line to take. And I remember, it doesn't matter if you're first or last, like we all go through it, because I remember my first hill climb actually wasn't open, and it actually was the 2016 Nationals, Bank Road.
Yeah.
So that was my first ever hill climb, and I did Nationals.
In at the deep end.
In at the deep end, so I had no idea on my numbers. I had no idea on where I'd lie within the competition. But I think maybe it's just something that comes naturally to some and less to others. I remember being in the car park, and my mum had driven up with me, and she had a school. She was marking her school books and doing her knitting. She kind of knew to leave me alone. And I decided on the drive up, I needed to get in some kind of space. And I remember you hear all the bells clanging. So everybody had these cowbells in the distance on Bank Road. You have the car park where all the competitors are, and you can hear clanging up the bells.
For long, because it really draws big crowds there, and you can hear it from miles away. So
it's like you're in a gladiator pen, I always think. Like you're in the back, and you're going to go out and face the lions. And actually, for me, it was just this great experience. Yeah. I really drew off it.
That was a great year. I won it that year, and... I just went, there was no pressure because I got hit by a car about a week before, so there was no pressure on me. So I just turned up and I just rode it because it was my local, it was like 3 miles down the road. So I just went there, rode it, and I got to the top and I looked down because I knew that climb really well. And I looked back down and thought, oh, that's quite quick. I might get on the podium with that. And then I won. And then next thing, I just... anti-doping came chasing me, so I had to do that. So I didn't actually get much atmosphere after that because I got straight to anti-doping, and because sometimes I really enjoy it straight after the hill climb when you're mingling and chatting to people. But that day I didn't get any of that because I got straight.
But from a spectator point of view, Bank Road is an amazing one to go if you're like if it's your first time to go and watch a hill climb. or competing one. Bankrose is brilliant because even when it's not a nationals, as just an open, you still get big crowds, and they literally crowd the road, so no cars are getting through. Yeah. You know, and they'll part it. So it's a bit like, riding
a wave,
grand tour sort of feel. Yeah. And it was my mum's first competition to come and watch. Yeah. So from a spectator point of view, within 10 minutes, she was telling me how to ride this climb. And it was just amazing. Like, that's how absorbing the whole scene is. So she gone off to get a coffee from me. When she came back, she goes, some of those riders going off a bit too hard at the beginning. We need to watch out for the grid. I was how do you know this stuff already?
The launch of your mother's coaching career. Yeah. Right there.
Such an easy concept to get around.
But again, it's so easy, though, to listen to everybody. Mm. And, if you're mingling, and it's very easy to, saying don't go too hard, it's windy at the top, and you think, okay, I'm gonna go a bit easier at the bottom, where you don't actually need to, because you were riding a different race to them. Like, I do bank road in about 2:18, I think I set the course record at, where that's a different climb to a 3-minute climb. So some people are doing it in 3 minutes, so I'll ride that, and I'm using different energy sources for that 2:18 climb than a 3-minute climb. So you have to remember, it's your race, you're the one who's riding it for yourself. You've planned it yourself, just ignore everybody else and just get on with it. And I think that's quite crucial. Because everybody loves giving advice, but obviously I think one of the crucial things is listen to everybody's advice, but only pick up what you need to.
You're listening to the Brother UK Cycling Podcast.
You've both talked really well about preparation. There must be factors there that are uncontrollable, like the wind, like the weather. How do you cope with that? Is it a matter of controlling the controllables?
Yeah, and I find that's probably one of my strengths. I'm quite chilled out at the start. Because I see some like people I train with day in, day out, and are really good hill climbers and probably should do better and should have won national titles, but haven't, just because they put too much pressure on themselves and can't perform on the day. Mm. Where I think you have to, obviously, be prepared, but you remember you're only going to do what you're going to do, and that's it. So there's no point in putting extra pressure on yourself. Mm. And you know in yourself you're going to get everything out. You know, for me, I know I'm going to be almost passing out at the top of the climb, so why stress, why put added pressure onto myself? Why do I need to think about, I need to beat him, win this, I'll do what I do, I'll get what I can out, and if I win, fantastic.
That's how I felt, because I had a bit of pressure going up to the nationals, people saying, oh, you're going to win. I was like, well, this is, again, it's opinions and listening to opinions. And it's like, at the end of the day, just do the best you can. And also, sometimes I think about that's really true. I think you lose a lot of energy in stressing. Yeah. And so quite often I think, just remember that ride you did with a group of people, and about somewhere during the ride, somehow you felt good and you hit that climb and you did your PB. And I just try and recapture that feeling of, like, you're relaxed, you've had your warm-ups, your legs warmed up, and that feeling of like fun as well.
What other mechanisms, Rebecca, do you use to manage pressure? When we spoke earlier about your approach to Monsal, up to and including booking a shepherd's hut to reduce the journey in on the day.
That was like more like a whole season campaign type of approach. So we're both running up and down the country, and you got to look at it as a whole. Like you say, you normally take a couple of weeks off, and same for me, I take some time off from racing to the hill climb season. So you have to look at it as a whole, as a campaign, and the biggest factors are stress, which come from lack of sleep, you know, which and traveling. Mm-hmm. So if you can start reducing some of those impacts, so before Monsal, I stayed at a shepherd's hut. I live in the middle of the countryside. For me, just a hut in a field is going to be a lot more relaxing than a hotel room. And it was available on Airbnb, and it was close by. So I booked it. It's just more about like a whole season strategy. You know, you got to get to the nationals, and that's always the goal, you know.
Yeah.
That's interesting that you approach it as a campaign, that it's a distinct part of the season.
And each nationals is, basically the nationals is on a different climate share, which basically some riders, it helps more than others. So let's say 1 year it can be a really short climb, and then another year it can be like last year where it's 14 minutes. So you have to kind of design your race schedule and your training around that. So you might not do some of the short climbs and focus on some of the long climbs because you did the nationals of the long climb. And you know you were really good at the short climb, so you might have to think, okay, don't focus on them at all. Let's get some long 10-minute efforts in and just focus on that. So you have to kind of design basically your hill climb season around basically what your goals want to be. Some people's goals are Monsel Het because they think that, okay, that's one of the biggest individual hill climbs of the year. I want to win that. And then some people think, okay, I'm going to be nationals. But then some might think, okay, I want to win my age category at Ryber on the second to last weekend in November. And that's great as well. And it's great hearing people's aims. So this year, I think the hill climb's about 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes. And again, that'll probably suit people who want to aim for like Monsel Het and the shorter ones and the Catford and the London-based hill climbs. Mm. So it's going to be interesting. And this year really is. And yeah. You'll probably find the podium was completely different to then another year.
Yeah. And for Monsel, like I was in a, yeah, my coach was recommending I do a different climb that day because Monsel was not suited to last year's nationals, which was 14 minutes. And I really was focused at the beginning of the hill climb season on the nationals. Then obviously I started getting all these course records and wins. And then it was, became a real tie, like a bit of a like tear. Like, do I do Horseshoe Pass?
Yeah.
Or do I do Monsel? And I literally yo-yoed. I entered them both and I yo-yoed, you know, between them both. And then eventually, I suppose it's like you think, well, when will this happen to me again? And I should try this very prestigious event. Mm. So I sort of sacrifice a little bit of my nationals training.
Yeah. Because from Monsel, I've done that for the last, because really low, quite local for me. So I rode out and watched Monsel before I was back into hill climbs again. So I knew how it is, and I think the first time I did it, I came 11th, and then second time I think I came 5th, and then when I came 5th, I thought, okay, I might be able to win this, but I came 5th with a kind of 1:34, and the winner did like a 1:24. Now a 1:24 would struggle to get in the top 10.
Yeah.
What's driving that, Adam? What's driving that continual improvement?
I think I just like winning. And once you've been there, you want it back again.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. You don't want to give it up. No.
But in terms of the field, in terms of everybody getting quicker year on year, what's pushing that? Is it equipment? Is it better training?
Equipment and people being more specific.
Yeah.
So there's riders who are just specific, like just focus on 1.5 minute efforts. I'll struggle on this a little bit because obviously I've got the road calendar as well. Like you have the road calendar and then you go into the hill climbs. So sometimes you might lose some of that real specific power, but then you've got to make up for that on details and make sure you get it right. And knowing, I came second, and I mean, Andy Nichols came second and Callum won this year. I think it was 2 seconds between, I think fourth and winning. And there's not much in it. There's only a wheel slip and there's only really small details. And I've been at Monsel, come second twice, won it twice, and 5th once. So I kind of got a good record, and I know I'm going to get a good ride out of it. So I know if I just turn up, everything I've done in the past, be relaxed, and go for it. But the second time I won it, it was funny. I was at the bottom of the hill, and I think Joe Clark was behind me, and Russell Downing had just gone up, and he just set his PB at 1:18.
Yikes. Three-time
winner. It was like, okay. Whew. And basically, I looked back down and I clicked down 2 gears and changed down. And then Joe Clark behind me, he did exactly the same. And we just nodded at each other and we said, if we're going for it, we need to go for it, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I did a 1:16.2. So I won, Joe came second, Russell came third. And it was just little things like that. And so Monsel's a weird one because you can actually hear the commentator at the top. So you can hear the times what people have done. So I heard Russell saying he's done 1:18. I'm thinking, ooh, that's quick. And down a couple of days.
Let me ask you a question about, because you mentioned gear there. And I remember when I came to P. Royd Lane, I saw you in the car park and I saw your bike and I was like, oh my God. You know, like everything had been like cut down and, you know, it's like you're taking a hacksaw to everything. And, you know, I sort of put my finger under it and sort of lifted it up and went, oh my God, Adam, that is insanely light. And then what gear were you riding? And I'm like, you're going up in that gear. Like I'd need like 34 to sort of get up there, and you're like, oh no, I'll ride that in the 39 to, you know, I'm like, oh my god, it made me realize the strength that you needed. But actually, sort of like, so sort of transpose this over a moment, that you know, if someone's racing, then of course the UCI regulate bike weight and all these sorts of things. So in hill climbing, I don't think, is that regulated at all? So basically, if you can afford like those stringy wheels that we've got there, Rebecca, should make a big difference to you.
Yes.
If you've got a set of wheels that are sort of 700 grams lighter than everyone else's, that it gives you an advantage effectively. So, you know, your weight, your power and your kit is really, I guess, what it's all about. Very so much, yeah. How much emphasis do you put on those things? And on the basis that your bike was sort of like a, you know, cyborg bike, you know, it'd been all cut and wheels and everything, it looked amazing. And Rebecca, you've got these amazing wheels here now. So how much of your time and attention do you spend on those things to help you in your overall performance in the season?
So for me, it's kind of a strange kind of, it just goes together. So at the end of the road race season, I'm doing 20 hours a week training, 25 hours. And then you go into the hill climb season, and then it gets cut in half because you do less mileage, more specific efforts. And then you've got time on your hands. So what shall I do with this time?
I'll take a hacksaw to my bike.
Yes, it's what they say, like the devil makes work from idle hands kind of thing. So basically I get the hacksaw out. And so I've got the hook, so I cut the bars down, took everything I can off the saddle, I get the Dremel out, Dremel bits off, and then you just think about what you can do. And for hill climbers, we spend weeks and weeks like cutting down your diet, making sure you're eating right, eating nutrition, food and stuff like that. But also, I also think some people go over the top with that, and you think you still need your power.
Yeah.
Power's a big critical thing. But if you can shave a couple of kilos off your bike, that's a massive, massive amount. It's a good percentage. And I do think I have like this little tally in my head. So if I lose a kilo off my bike, it's like losing 3 kilos off me. Because it's not on me, I'm carrying it with me.
Exactly.
And that's how I feel, kind of thing. So
where do you draw the line? Where is the line between safety and...
So the line is what the RTT sets, which is you need 2 brakes. If you're riding fixed, you've got to have a lock ring on the rear. So you've got to have 2 brakes, working brakes.
And a rear light this year.
Oh, yeah, rear light.
Rear light now. Yeah. Yes, that's new, isn't it?
I can see you guys flinching.
I know, it's weight.
The thought of the extra weight.
Yeah,
just like a smallest flashing LED count as a red light. I mean, how are you going to approach that?
Drilled, with a drilled cover.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting what you pointed out about how you carry the weight. So I've come to the same conclusion. Weight, you might say weight is weight, but I've come to this conclusion too, that actually, no, it's where you're carrying the weight. You know, so if your bike is lighter, somehow I feel that's going to just be better than, say, having a heavier bike and being lighter. Mm. You've got to carry that bike up, as opposed to your body's, you know, biomechanics all being connected somehow. It's fascinating.
I think it's the percentage of weight between your bike and your body. So obviously, the lighter you are, the percentage of your bike's greater to your body mass. So I think it's a big thing, having a nice light bike. And the longer I've done it, I get more relaxed with what I'm doing, and I don't have to, tangent has to be as light as it used to be. But that's just, I think,
what is the ideal physiology? When we think about road racing, for example, you know, in the Grand Tours, those big, long climbs, the climbers are absolutely tiny. People like, you know, Nairo Quintana. In the Ardennes Classics, you know, a powerhouse like Philippe Gilbert can be a force. Yeah. Where does that physiological component fit within hill climbing, or is the difference made there in short courses and long courses?
There are some specialists out there now, like, you know, who are doing like especially for the short climb stuff, like within, like, you know, 2 minutes. I think because of, in Britain, we don't really have long climbs. I think Great Dunfels are the longest, like 20 minutes. So we don't need to be like really light. So I think it can suit an all rounder.
Yeah.
My target is my aim as a hill climber is to be an all rounder, so someone who can actually target any type of climb.
Yeah, and that's one thing. It's the same. I like to be able to get up there on any hill climb. And like, so I've won the nationals once, and I've put a podium 4 times, and I've, like, that's one of my, winning it was amazing, but just being consistent over them years made a big, made me really happy, because I was racing against different people on different climbs. So on one climb I was racing against Colin Browns, and the next one I was racing against Dan Evans, and it was kind of really nice being able to focus on all the climbs and be able to enjoy all the different events.
Yeah, and I think you're like, you're pushing yourself and you're challenging yourself to like, can I do this? And I did Harder Hell Climb, which is the steepest climb in the world. And and about 2 weeks before, so I'd heard about this event sometime in the summer, and I was like, oh, it sounds a little bit like, you know, I don't know, like it's not something that's, it's new to the scene, and I never, and I was like, ah, I won't do it, it sounds a bit gimmicky. But then it's just down the road from me. And then I know deep down I was actually worried about losing on like something so close, you know. And even a bit scared about the climb, actually, because it's so steep. You know, I saw the YouTube, like, you know, the video showing it, like GCN did a video. I was like, that sounds ridiculous. Like, was it tops out just on near 40%? And then about 2 weeks before, I was at a local race, road race league, and this girl called Rachel, she rides for a local team. She said, oh, you're going to do it. Go on, have a go. And I was like, no. And then I went online. Because you can't help it.
Yeah.
Someone puts a little spark of an idea in your head, being competitive. Went online and I saw the write-up. It said, there will be competing Dan Evans and Jessica Evans, Jess Evans, like four times Welsh champion. And in my head, I went, but I'm the current Welsh champion.
I should be there.
And then that just did it for me then. And that was it.
Yeah.
And I entered. And it sounds crazy because they had to put all the names up. So as you enter, your name goes straight into the list on British Cycling. So I entered the last day. So that, it sounds crazy, but up to that point, I could see that Jess Evans necessarily didn't have a competitor. I just put it in there right at the end.
I think we should add a little bit of context here for the listeners, that the Harlech Hill climb is held on what is reputed to be the world's steepest paved road.
Guinness Book of World Records.
Records. And the video of you, Rebecca, riding in that race went absolutely viral. In your Brother UK Fusion RT kit. I mean, people in the comments were saying, she doesn't sit down. She just goes and goes and goes.
That was, again, mental preparation. So I went there. I had no idea what I was going to do. I had no idea. My mum and dad came, really unusual. And I literally did the recce. I did a bit of recce about 2 hours before. And it was a case of standing there going, I don't know if I can even get up this. And the whole gear thing was like, what gear? And I went up in so it'd been a 36, 28, just as a recce. Yeah. And actually it was all right. Yeah, it's the first two bottom corners are really horrible. But then, so then I had to really decide what I was going to ride, because I was like, oh no, I got up that all right, probably too easy. So I chose what I was going to do, and I had no idea. I beat Jess by 2 seconds, but I didn't sit down. And there was a reason I had to choose this before I rode it. My back gives me extreme pain on those short, steep climbs. And I knew my back would go. And when my back goes, I know I'm putting the max effort in. So I decided that when that happened, I'd go, this is a good sign. Accept it. Yeah. Go with it.
Yeah.
And that's why I didn't sit down. So I was actually experiencing huge back pain about halfway up. But it was, in me, a positive sign. I was like, yep, keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, this is flipping the laws of nature, because pain is a protective mechanism, isn't it? It's the body's way of saying, stop doing this. You're causing me damage. That leads me into a very specific question, which I wanted to ask you both. Adam, when we've discussed this previously, and sorry, I'm putting this the wrong way around. The point I'm making here is one of the most visible aspects of the hill climb is seeing the riders collapse and curl almost into the fetal position the second they cross the finish line. And that is the most visual aspect of how deep the riders go. There are differences of opinion on whether that is a positive thing to do or whether that is ultimately damaging. Yeah. So let's get your thoughts on that.
So for me, I've been there and I've done it several times, and I've learnt not to do it. For me, it's probably more critical on the short hill climbs where you get real loads of lactic acid. It's agony. But I find if I don't roll over the top, over the finish line, because normally you get on hill climbs because you get everything out of your body, a lot of people fall over once they cross over the line. So you've got these people called catchers, and they basically catch you, and then either basically say, what would you like to do? And normally they just basically lie you down on the floor with your bike intact. So they basically just lift you up, lie you down on the floor. And you just stay there, basically in agony, like in the fetal position. But from past experience, I find if they basically, I just say to them, just keep pushing me to the flat, and then I just keep the legs rolling and try to keep my heart rate up a little bit, because I find if your heart rate, obviously it's gone up so quickly, it comes down quite quickly as well. If you keep your heart rate up, it keeps the blood flowing, keeps your body getting rid of that lactic acid, and I feel much better afterwards. I'm still in amazing pain, and normally I'm in amazing pain when people can't see me. And then I roll back around with a smile on my face. The one thing I do get, though, where I always get a migraine in the evening. I always get a migraine. And either it's a really nice migraine or a really horrible.
A nice migraine.
So if I've won, it's a successful one. And it's worth it.
It's the price to pay.
Yeah.
And I don't mind it. But if I don't, it's kind of, I need to try harder next time. I don't want this migraine for no reason at all. And I think it's because obviously your blood pressure's all over the place and stuff like that, and you put yourself in a horrible place. It's normally 7 o'clock that evening. I can only switch it on and I know I'm going to get a migraine that evening.
Rebecca, what's your take on the catch? Yeah. People catching you, laying you down, putting you in the fetal position. Is that something you welcome or something you try and avoid?
I've not really done that. Top of nationals this year. So I put out my PB power over, I can't remember my time now, 15 minutes. So I put out a PB power. I didn't really feel I had. I don't know why, but, you know, cross the line. There's nobody at the top of the nationals. Really bizarre. Everyone's just before the top. You cross the line, and it's just more. Yeah. So you're on your own. So there's no, some people say like, oh, do people do it for like a bit of a spectator aspect or something like that? And I rolled across the line and I got off the bike, and then all of a sudden this wave of like nausea came over me, and I was like, I need to lie down. You were like going to faint almost. So that was that one. But I think it's a really good point, actually. And I never really thought about it that way in terms of lactic acid and keeping your heart rate up.
Yeah.
And also having a migraine, it's like so extreme.
Yeah.
But I do know that feeling about like winning, losing. Like I got to feel quite comfortable with winning this year. And I remember like one hill climb and Peaslows, which has been run as nationals.
Yeah.
You won that one this year as well. Yeah. And I won too. I rode it and it was horrendous. I felt awful at the top. Awful climb.
Yeah.
It's the initial one is steep up through the trees, quite slippy.
Yeah.
So everyone says go hard at the beginning because it gets easy. It doesn't get easy.
No.
So you hit the first ramp, you get up there quite quick, you burn a lot of matches, and you're like, right, now ease off. And then you're like, no, I can't. It's still a wall. And I got to the top, and one of my other competitors, Lucy Lee, she was there, and she's like, she started recording all the other girls coming up. She's like, oh, they've done like 2.5 minutes. Yeah, you'll be kidding me. Like I'm a minute slower than, or like, you know, a few seconds slower than everyone else. And I couldn't clock it in my head. And I always thought I'm like quite a good loser.
Yeah.
But all my friends around me said my face was like thunder. And then they announced me that I'm the winner. And it's like my whole atmosphere changed around me.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't realize how affected you are actually by the win and the lose. Yeah.
Well, can I just ask you a quick question before we wrap up and we finish, which is you're really selling hill climbing today. So if that kind of, you know, wanted participants for hill climbing, you know, go to your dark place.
You will have
extreme pain. Yeah. You know, be encouraged by somebody hitting a frying pan with a wooden stirring spoon. You know, wear a flat cap. Yeah. Wear a cape.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, right, rewind a minute. But actually, in all seriousness, you know, I think today's podcast was actually about kind of getting these stories out of you two. Yeah. You know, you are two of our best climbers in the country, but also I think I wanted to make sure that we also said to people, you can have a go.
Yeah,
you just get your bike out like you started, Adam.
Yeah,
and have a go. Go and support some of these hill climbs if you see one. Get out of bed and go down there and take a frying pan you know, have fun. Take the kids.
Yeah.
And you'll probably meet a load of new people and, you know, feel like you're joining a new community. So would that be how you would sum up that community?
It's kids, it's families, friends, kids, you know, women, men. It's the most inclusive bike community I've been involved with. Like, no, I was new to the scene this year. You've been involved with the scene longer, Adam. So coming in as a newcomer, within like 2 weeks of doing Harlech Hill Climb, I felt like I'd actually met friends, like all through the seasons and the year, you know, for a few years now. I think you get so into work and athletic life, But then in the space of 2 weeks, I made proper friends, and that's just continued.
Yeah, it's one part of cycling where everybody who's there loves riding the bikes, loves being there, and there's people there who've like I say, don't ride bikes, who are just here to support the event. It's such fun, and you need to go and just appreciate the atmosphere and just watch people just suffering, but again, not suffering as well. It's all part of it. Like you say, people in superhero outfits, and you might get the odd mankini running up alongside of you, I think. But it's...
And there's like cups of teas and cake at the end in a local village hall, and there's something really basic about it all still, which is about human connection, which I think we all like need, and yet gets lost so much these days. Yeah.
It's a scene without a downside, it seems. Yeah. It's inclusive, it's supreme athletic performance, it's readily available. There are hill climbs all over the country. So.
And all you need is a bike. The first year I got on the podium, my bike was quite standard. And it's only when I got into it, I started chopping bits and stuff like that. But
you need to get out more, Adam. This whole Dremel thing. It's got to stop.
Your bike will thank you.
Just bike, and real light, and just have fun.
Wonderful. Yeah. Well, what a brilliant recommendation. Thank you very much indeed for joining us, Rebecca Richardson and Adam Kenway. We do what's called a social shout-out, so the people listening can follow you on social media if they'd like to. Rebecca, where can people find you on social media?
Instagram is... Box_Richardson. Facebook's Rebecca Richardson. And Twitter is...
@RRA.
Adam?
I'm not that great on social media. I haven't got a Twitter account. I think my Facebook account is...
Adam Kenway.
I think Adam Kenway. And I think my Instagram is probably Kenway Adam.
Kenway Adam. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And Phil, where can people follow you?
Oh, yes, you can always find me on Twitter, primarily at Roadfill. I'm also at Roadfill on Instagram for other bits and bobs.
Great. And we very much hope that you'll be following Brother Cycling. And we are at Brother Cycling across all three channels. Rebecca, Adam, thank you very much again for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yep, thanks.
Phil, we've just been talking to Rebecca Richardson and Adam Kenway, two of the country's leading hill climbers, and luckily for us, both within the Brother UK stable. What an amazing conversation.
It was amazing. I mean, one thing I got tuned into there was that Rebecca did that super steep climb on 36-28 gearing, and I'm like, I'd need literally, how did you do it on that gearing? And it just shows you how strong they are. And I think there's a real insight from this podcast today just about, you know, how is it, you know, your human potential, here it is in front of you, and you can always go further than you think that you can. So actually, what are your self-limiting beliefs, and actually how do you challenge those and push through to find this sort of new potential for yourself? And it was just fascinating to hear, you know, that in their darkest of places, that they actually want to go there.
It was incredible how ready they were to talk about that, embracing the psychological aspect, really, to get a better athletic performance. You and I have both been to hill climbs. It looks like the simplest thing in the world. You know, it's somebody racing up a hill against the clock. And yet today we uncovered layer after layer after layer, whether that be tactical, practical, equipment, psychological, mental, you name it. They had something to say about it, and they sparked off each other brilliantly, didn't they?
They were excellent. And in fact, it's made me think, I'm going to have a go at a hill climb. I am going to have a go at it. Look, I might be on a 34-32 gear ratio, and I'll probably take my Rally Banana bike along, so I'm not going to sort of, you know, try and win honours. I never do that. But actually, I think it just sounds, and now I've been there and experienced it and heard more from these guys today, I think, you know, I'm going to have a go at one. And I think maybe if you fancy having a go at one too, why don't you use this podcast to motivate yourself to get to a hill climb near you?
Absolutely.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.